You know, it's extremely frustrating that now the media has finally woken up. Finally, the media has accepted the fact that the Hunter Biden story is a real story. They're asking Joe Biden tough questions about Hunter Biden, not too often, because there's a protective wall surrounding Joe Biden by his people. But every once in a while, it happened even on this late night talk show where Joe Biden was asked about the Hunter Biden scandal, this horrific, massive scandal, epic scandal. And of course, Biden's dodging the rare question that he gets. But my point is that the media, how many months did they tell us this story was fake? How many months did they, did Joe Biden, was he allowed to deny this story saying it's nothing? There's no story. It's made up by Trump. And the media just totally went with the narrative, never fact-checked the man like they did with Trump, Mueller, Russia collusion, which really was a fake story. And now suddenly we have confirmation by the same mainstream media that, oh yeah, this is a real story, whether it's because Biden won the election, so now they got him in office, and so now they can feel free to ask these questions, whether it's because they actually want to push Biden out and they want Kamala Harris, who's far more radical, whatever the reason is. But how many years did they bury the Hunter? We told you about this Hunter Biden story. We've been on it for years. The media suppressed it to make sure that Biden could win. The media painted the conservatives as though we were the lunatic conspiracy theorists. They kept telling us that there's no evidence about any sort of Hunter Biden scandal with Burisma, China, and everything else. And now they're actually asking Biden questions about it, treating it like a real story. No retraction, no apology. They don't get up and say, hey, listen, you know, actually there was substance here. We're sorry that we made you guys look like a bunch of fools and a bunch of lunatics. I actually have a friend. I have a friend who's very, very viciously anti-Trump. And, you know, he actually mocked me. When I would talk about Hunter Biden and Burisma, he made fun of me. He kept telling me that there was no evidence. There's massive evidence. I mean, we all know about the millions of dollars with Burisma and China and Air Force Two. All that stuff is fact. We all know about Joe Biden as VP pressuring Ukraine to actually fire the prosecutor, withholding, I mean, what, billions, withholding how much money in aid from Ukraine until they agreed? We have Biden on tape. We've played you that tape many times. I mean, just a massive conflict of interest there. And it turns out now there are two FBI investigations, not one, but two at least FBI investigations ongoing against Hunter Biden. He even admits to knowing about one of them. And you know that means there's so much more that he's not admitting to. Think about that. Two FBI investigations have been going on for many, many months, maybe years, against the son of the president-elect of the United States. And AG Barr, along with the mainstream media, kept that hidden, kept that buried. And yet we all knew about the Bob Mueller investigation, right? It's only when it comes to Democrats that we have no right to divulge and disclose secret investigations. But when it comes to any investigation about Trump, which, by the way, is fake and phony and bogus and a hoax, I mean, there, everything possible leaks, and nobody has any problem with it at all. And remember, President Trump actually tried to get Ukraine to help uncover the details about the Hunter Biden scandal, because that's how crucial it is to be aware of this about a presidential candidate who now is the president-elect. And what did they do? How did they reward Trump for trying to find out, uncover the details that nobody else was uncovering about Hunter Biden? They impeached him. They impeached Trump for trying to get to the facts. And then they blocked the New York Post story. Twitter blocked the New York Post story about the Hunter Biden laptop. They called it Russian disinformation, right? So that Joe Biden could get elected. They were totally complicit. Then they eventually, they removed the block to that story and retracted and said that it never should have happened. Thank you very much. Weeks later, who knows how many votes were cast during that time. So the media was complicit in a cover-up to ensure that Joe Biden could win the election. And now many journalists are conceding that this is a massive scandal, that these allegations are very real. There's a ton of evidence. All right, we have so much else to get to. There's been a massive hack of government agencies, of course. We have the latest details on election fraud. CNN, once again, has published a fake news story, this time about First Lady Melania Trump, claiming that she broke COVID rules, a completely false story, as we'll get to. So Congressman Jim Jordan on Fox has blasted the media for burying not just the Hunter Biden story, but the Eric Swalwell story, another epic scandal over here where you have a congressman sitting on these prestigious House committees. I mean, very, very with access to very sensitive, highly classified information. And yet he spent years in close contact, having a close friendship or relationship here with a Chinese spy. And by the way, Eric Swalwell spent years accusing Trump of colluding with Russia, which never happened. He was allegedly colluding with China. So Jordan says the media is doing a disservice to the American people, no kidding, by not covering the Swalwell story, despite the massive amount of coverage they gave to the Trump-Russia hoax. Here's a quote from Jim Jordan on Fox Business. Quote, what did the Speaker of the House know when she selected Swalwell, put him on the Intel Committee, and kept him there? Step back for a second. Think about what we've learned in just the last week. We learned that, oh, in fact, Hunter Biden was under investigation by the DOJ. Over 2 years ago, they started to investigate Hunter Biden. We've learned a member of the Intel Committee, Representative Swalwell, was hanging out with a Chinese spy for years. And then we learned the Speaker of the House kept him on the Intel Committee. But somehow the big story over the years has been President Trump working with the Russians, which we know was a hoax. So the big takeaway from, frankly, all of this is, why won't the press cover the real stories? I mean, you know how much time the networks have devoted to Hunter Biden in the last week and a half? 26 seconds, and the New York Times has yet to do a story on Eric Swalwell and his relationship with this Chinese spy, end quote. So Jim Jordan could not have said it any better myself. Meanwhile, there's a story in The Blaze. The media, yes, the mainstream media, is frustrated at Joe Biden. See, this is what happens, is the Democrats, they treat the media badly, and yet the media still always gives them all the praise and gives them this incredibly positive coverage, only gives Trump negative coverage, and yet Trump gave unfettered, unlimited access to the mainstream media, and Joe Biden, they are keeping him totally hidden in a protective shell. It's unreal. And yet the media, of course, they continue to, give Biden all this positive coverage. It's egregious, you know. So here's what happened. The mainstream media is very frustrated. This is pretty shocking. According to The Blaze, what happens is Biden, they do a once-a-week Zoom press conference via Zoom. So they're obviously in total control of who gets to ask the questions because they can mute the mics, right? So they only allow in reporters who they actually want to ask the questions. So even members of the mainstream media are getting frustrated because they take five questions in a week, and it's only the people that they handpick because they know that they're going to ask them these softball questions. So this is, I'm reading here from The Blaze. Reporters are miffed that the Biden transition team appears to take questions from only a handful of select media outlets. The Biden team holds a weekly briefing on Zoom where reporters can request to ask a question. In the latest press briefing this past Friday, Biden's team fielded questions from the New York Times, CNN, Washington Post, PBS, and Politico. I would just interject here. Those are all extremely friendly outlets who, of course, gush over Joe Biden. Of the five questions the media were permitted to ask, none were related to Hunter Biden. He allegedly failed to disclose $400,000 in income from the Burisma gas company on his 2014 tax returns. He's under a federal investigation, as we know, as he himself admitted, and many more things that to this scandal that they are, of course, denying. So here's what happened. There's a Zoom chat. There's a chat there where the reporters who are on the Zoom conference, even though they're not actually asking a question to Biden, but they can have this chat, right, where they like write in their thoughts or whatever. So they use the Zoom chat, these reporters, to ask for more access. Sam Stein from the Daily Beast, which is a liberal news outlet, said, quote, hey, guys, he said it's on the chat. Guys, there's tons of folks looking to ask questions. Since this is being done once a week, can we please go longer or at least hold more frequent briefings? Zeke Miller from the AP, the Associated Press, said, quote, any chance you can take a few more questions? There are a lot of folks here with questions. And White House reporter Andrew Feinberg of the AP said, quote, is there a point in saying that we want to ask questions if you only call on the same small group every single week? And what's amazing is that President Trump, he gave so much access to reporters. Remember, reporters are so negative about Trump. Remember, he stopped the press briefings there for a bunch of months before Kayleigh McEnany. And yet, President Trump, he'd sit there every time he gets on the helicopter on Marine One on his way to travel somewhere. He would literally sit outside and take 15, 20 minutes of questions. Sometimes he'd hold these press conferences. He would take hours of questions. They wouldn't handpick. It's not like Biden, where they would only take questions where they wink, wink. They already knew who was asking the question, and they already knew, cleared the question beforehand or made sure that it was not going to discuss any controversial topic or any topic that was difficult to answer. They didn't give Trump softballs. They threw the toughest questions they could imagine. They grilled him. And yet President Trump never backs down. He'd always be willing to take. Remember, he goes at it. I mean, he'll go back and forth. Jim Acosta and a lot of these other vicious, cruel, evil reporters, Trump will go toe-to-toe with them. He'll fight them. He in fact, he relishes that. But just think about that and just compare that to Biden. I mean, here we're going to go back to the same old Washington establishment where everything, the whole narrative, it's all scripted ahead of time so that they can make sure that Joe Biden never has to face a tough question in his life. And so it really just is. And as I said, and the media still, they continue to shower Biden with praise. And, I mean, they could not be more vicious and nasty to Trump if they tried. All right, so I want to read you this magazine letter I came across. Basically, just I'll give you some basic details. I just want to show you, you know, the liberal mindset, liberal mentality, because it does frighten me sometimes. You know, we can't lose sight of the fact, you know, that these liberals, their twisted, distorted view of reality is really very shocking and disturbing. Essentially, there was an article written in a magazine defending Twitter, talking about how Twitter does not really actually censor conservatives. I mean, it seems just absurd, but if you look at the data, somehow you're not going to find evidence that Twitter censors conservatives any more than it censors liberals. And then there was a letter written in response to that. The letter was extremely well written, essentially giving a bunch of examples, which examples we've talked about on this show many times, of how Twitter and social media censors conservatives and censors President Trump repeatedly, as we all know. You know, and then so the back and forth as well, but it's only anecdotal evidence. And it's like, well, you know, anecdotal, it's very hard. You know, I prefer data over anecdotal evidence, of course, but it's almost impossible to compile accurate data on these things. The funny thing is there ever any anecdotal evidence in the other direction? This is what I say. You know, when you have numerous anecdotes, numerous stories and examples of Twitter censoring conservatives, and yet you have no evidence on the other side. You never have a single anecdote the other direction, a single instance that you can deliver where they censored liberals and didn't censor conservatives. And then when Twitter themselves defends it and they say, yeah, well, we censor Trump, we don't censor the Ayatollah, and here's why, and they actually defend it. So you have Twitter admitting it. So the whole conversation's absurd. But here's what I want to show you is one of the points. I want to show you the response. So one of the points made in the letter here, again, the letter is attacking respectfully attacking the article that's saying that, oh, Twitter doesn't really censor conservatives at all. So the letter says, quote, another example was during the George Floyd riots when Trump tweeted threats to the agitators to stop rioting. Twitter decided to label the tweet glorifying violence, but it did not do the same thing to Ayatollah Khamenei of Iran when he tweeted about wiping Israel off the map, or when left-wing blue check marks on Twitter threatened to physically attack Trump supporters. So what is the response here? The response of the person who wrote the original article, what's his response? He says, your contrast between President Trump's tweet about rioters and the threats of Ayatollah Khamenei toward Israel is not accurate. Whether you agree with the policy, Twitter allows world leaders to tweet things that are foreign policy saber-rattling, even though they describe violence. It was seen as merely as saber-rattling because it involves a foreign country. In the case of President Trump's tweets about protesters, he was threatening his own citizens. That Twitter does not allow. If you can show me Ayatollah Khamenei gets away with threatening his own citizens that on Twitter, that would be a different story. So what's he saying? He's saying, well, yeah, you can't compare because Trump threatening the rioters, that's his own citizens. Ayatollah Khamenei threatening to wipe Israel off the map, threatening genocide repeatedly, threatening to wipe Israel off the map, to blow up the country, that's allowed. That is foreign policy saber-rattling. Twitter allows saber-rattling, but they don't allow leaders to threaten. So if Ayatollah Khamenei, if he threatens his own people on Twitter, which I'm sure he did, by the way, during the protest, but either way, if he threatens his own people, that would be unfair. So they literally, I mean, you can make this like phony logic, twisted logic to answer anything you want to answer. So if that's how you're operating, you're starting with your facts, and it's like, well, Twitter did this. You know, it's like, well, yeah, Ayatollah Khamenei, they allow his tweets because his name starts with an A, but Trump's name starts with a T. If his Trump's name started with an A, then of course they would allow his tweets to go through, but think about it, that's their policy. And then you defend it. You could agree or not, but that's their policy. Their policy is if it starts with an A, then they allow you to tweet. But if it starts with a T, or if your tweet is only 128 characters, not 170 characters or whatever, well, of course, Ayatollah Khamenei, he was threatening to wipe Israel off the map. That's not his own country. That's some other country. That's allowed. Trump was threatening to wipe his own people. By the way, Trump never threatened to wipe a single person off the map. You know, he was just threatening to crack down. He was threatening law and order. Oh, law and order. Well, that's egregious. Ayatollah, yeah, he's not saying anything about law and order, but he wants to just wipe countries off the planet. I mean, and think about, and people, they believe this stuff. They actually believe this drivel. All right, so new report, President Trump is considering appointing Sidney Powell, Sidney Powell as special counsel to investigate election fraud. And she's got the resume. She's a very successful U.S. attorney for many years. This would be such a great move. See, Trump, if he uses the special counsel against Biden and against the Democrats, the way they used it as a weapon against him, if on his way out of office, he puts these special counsels in place to investigate Hunter and to investigate election fraud, and that way they're immune. That way they're not able to be fired by Joe Biden. At least it would be extremely difficult for Biden to do it, and it would cause major problems for him. I hope President Trump does this. He floated the idea in a meeting, and he has every right to do this. He was burned by the special counsel, which was a bogus, phony hoax, and it was just literally used as a weapon to bring him down, and maybe it was successful. You know, for all we know, part of the reason that Trump lost is because hearing about Bob Mueller, Russia collusion for years, even though the whole thing ended up being debunked, even though Trump was exonerated, but it may have very possibly had an impact, especially the way the media twisted it around to make it seem like he wasn't exonerated. So here, Trump could actually use the special counsel to enforce the law, other than the way the Democrats used the special counsel and Rod Rosenstein used the special counsel, which is to twist the law around and sabotage the president. Meanwhile, Senator Rand Paul, during a Senate hearing last week, Senator Rand Paul actually said that the election was stolen, and he railed against voter fraud. Here's what Senator Rand Paul said in a Senate hearing on Wednesday. And Senator Rand Paul, one of the few people who actually has the courage to tell it like it is, and he's not afraid. He knows he's going to get scorned by the media either way, so he speaks the truth. So he said, quote, "The fraud happened. The election in many ways was stolen, and the only way it will be fixed is if we in the future reinforce the laws. We cannot just say it did not happen. We cannot just say, oh, 4,000 people voted in Nevada who were non-citizens and we're going to ignore it." And remember, Republicans have given examples of irregularities, I love that word, of fraud allegations of massive cheating and a massive alleged cover-up in Michigan, Arizona, Pennsylvania, and Nevada. And in that hearing, in the Senate hearing, by the way, attorney Jesse Binal testified that Nevada's election was inevitably riddled with fraud. He pointed out tens of thousands of votes that never should have been counted. I know, look, the Dominion voting machines, I know a lot of you want more information about the Dominion voting machines. There has been a subpoena issued. A subpoena has been issued that in Arizona for all the Dominion voting machines, every one of them, the entire group, every single Dominion voting machine in Arizona, to be handed over so that they can inspect these machines and try to see what the algorithms were, try to see if the machines were programmed to cheat, to ensure that Biden won. And apparently they are ignoring the subpoena. Apparently Arizona, in the latest report, they're ignoring this subpoena, and they're refusing to hand over the machines. And remember, Dominion, the head of Dominion, was scheduled to appear at a hearing in front of the Pennsylvania legislature. The Pennsylvania legislature is actually controlled by Republicans, I believe. And they were actually, and this is a few weeks back, at the very last minute, the head of Dominion Voting Systems backed out of that hearing. And you wonder what he's trying to hide. And they've been trying to get him back ever since. And look, I know a lot of you want more details. There are a lot of reports about the various ways that the Dominion machines may have been set up specifically, as we have reported a lot of this, to create fake results or to not count the ballots accurately and to make sure that Biden gets the win. And we know about reports of multiple glitches. So we are going to try to stay on top of that in the coming weeks and give you more details about that. All right, so there's been this massive cyber attack, as you may be aware, against multiple government agencies in the United States. And this is obviously extremely disturbing, that this kind of thing could happen. And most people are saying that it was the Russians, including Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State, says that it was the Russians that carried out the cyber attack. I would certainly not be surprised. There is President Trump has suggested that it may have been China, and that wouldn't surprise me either. I love how these people, well, for sure it was Russia, because we know Russia has tried to carry out these cyber attacks and to hack into American government computers. Hello, China, Russia, Iran. I mean, there are many countries. There's no shortage of countries that this could have that could have done this. And by the way, I wouldn't rule out the possibility it might be like an outside contractor, like a third party who's selling it to the highest bidder. You know, isn't it possible that there are hackers out there in who knows, in Norway or in Pakistan, you know, sitting in a basement somewhere with these very, very sophisticated high-tech computers, and they figured out a way to hack in? And by the way, it sounds like it's not so hard to do, as I'm going to explain in a moment, how this hack actually took place, how this breach took place. Pretty frightening, you know, that it was that the United States computers are so vulnerable, and in fact, it turns out it's negligence by the U.S. government, which I'm not surprised by at all, as I'm going to explain in a moment. So maybe it's like some independent hackers, and they just decide to sell the information to China, to Russia, to Iran, to all of them for enough money. I mean, none of these possibilities would surprise me, and they are all quite terrifying, especially that it turns out this breach has been going on for months. Who knows how much information they've been able to steal, these hackers? It's been going on for months. So they literally hacked into the Department of Energy and the National Nuclear Security Administration. Basically, the agency that is in charge of overseeing the United States nuclear weapons arsenal was hacked into by either the Russians, China, or both, or who knows who else. The Department of Homeland Security, the State Department, the Treasury Department, all were breached by this cyber hack, this cyber espionage, and this came through a software called SolarWinds, as I'm going to explain in a moment. SolarWinds, they're a third-party software, so they are not a government software, but they're in all these government computers. They're in lots of government computers. So you hack into the software. Basically, the software do these software updates, right? You'll log into your computer, and it'll talk about software updates, so that means the computer has to then get in touch with SolarWinds, and since the hackers hacked SolarWinds, they embedded a code, so they were able to get into all these computers at that point that had SolarWinds software, because the update connects the computers, you know, to the hackers, basically. So SolarWinds says at least 18,000 customers were compromised by this hack, including the agency that oversees the United States nuclear weapons arsenal, the Department of Energy, the National Nuclear Security Administration, Homeland Security, the State Department, the Treasury Department. I mean, have you ever heard of anything more frightening here in your life, that they have actually breached all of these agencies and who knows who else? And it's been going on for months. So I want to explain how exactly, by the way, Microsoft also, so it's not limited to the government, Microsoft, and this surprises me that Microsoft, you know, would be so vulnerable to a hack like this. Now, by the way, I want to mention, the Department of Energy, they say that the nuclear arsenal's security has not been compromised by this breach. I mean, come on. We know they're going to say that. How do we know that it's true? How do even they know that it's true, by the way? Are they even certain? But, like, I'm taking that one with a grain of salt. I don't believe that for a second. And, of course, they're going to try to spin this and clean up this mess in any way that they can. So how did this happen? Because the Russians, or whoever's responsible, embedded code in the software, and the software SolarWinds was not properly secured. So remember, a chain is only as strong as its weakest link. So if a government computer uses a software that is unsafe, then hackers can use that one unsafe software. They embed a code into that software, if they can breach that software, and then they use that to then breach your own system that has the software inside of it. I mean, it's really interesting. There was a story a few years back where hackers were able to get into a casino's bank account. How were hackers able to breach the bank account of some large casino, I believe in Las Vegas? How were they able to do it? Because there was a thermostat connected to Wi-Fi. They have these thermostats that connect to Wi-Fi, right? So that way you could control the thermostat from your phone or whatever. So the casino had a thermostat connected to the Wi-Fi in the casino, and that Wi-Fi was the same network, the same internet network that the computers of the casino and the banking computers and everything else were connected with. So they were able to get into the thermostat. Wasn't properly secured. I mean, it's a thermostat, right? Who's expecting that kind of thing? And these hackers ingeniously used the thermostat, got into that, and once they got into that, they were able to breach and get into the entire system. So here's a headline from Politico, quote, how U.S. agencies trust in untested software opened the door to hackers. The story in Politico says, quote, the government does not do much to verify the security of software from private contractors. That is how suspected Russian hackers got in. The massive months-long hack of agencies across the U.S. government succeeded in part because nobody was looking in the right place. The federal government conducts only cursory security inspections of the software it buys from private companies for a wide range of activities, from managing databases to opening internal chat applications. That created the blind spot that suspected Russian hackers exploited to breach the Treasury Department, Homeland Security, etc. After embedding code in widely used network management software made by a Texas company called SolarWinds, all they had to do was wait for the agencies to download routine software updates from the trusted supplier, and boom, they were in. They're in business over there. So that obviously is very concerning. We're going to keep an eye on that. All right, so let me update you on the schedule for this show. It looks like we are going to try to do... I know you want a predictable schedule. Believe me, I want one too. I've wanted one my whole life, not just for this show. You know, that's not quite how I operate, as I'm sure many of you have discovered. But I know it's important, so we're going to try. We've been very consistent with the Sundays, so it looks like we're going to try to do at least two shows a week, hopefully three, but at least two, and it's going to be Sunday, Wednesday. So that's going to be the game plan moving forward. So you can expect a show Sunday morning, or early afternoon, Wednesday morning, and then hopefully a bonus show on Friday. I'd love to do three shows a week. I know many of you have requested that, but we're looking like Sunday and Wednesday as of now. Look, obviously, we'll keep you posted, as we always try to do, but that's going to be the game plan for right now. CNN reported a fake news story about First Lady Melania Trump, and it was debunked by the hospital. They claimed that Melania Trump broke the COVID rules at a hospital. Well, the hospital actually came out and confirmed that she completely 100% abided by their masking rules and their COVID-19 rules. She read a book to children. She went to a children's hospital and read books to children. And CNN's Betsy Klein ran a headline and story claiming, quote, Melania Trump breaks children's hospital rules by taking off her mask to read to patients. However, the hospital's guidelines made it clear that speakers were allowed to remove their mask when they deliver a speech as long as they were a certain distance away. They're a certain distance away from the audience, which she was. Here's what CNN said, quote, First Lady Melania Trump broke stated mask policy at Children's National Hospital Tuesday when she removed her mask to read a holiday book to children. End quote. Here's a statement from the hospital. Quote, the First Lady did follow our mask protocols, which is based on DC health guidance, which states wearing a mask is not required when a person is giving a speech for broadcast or an audience, provided nobody is within 6 feet of the speaker. In the case of today's visit, when the First Lady did remove her mask, she was more than 12 feet away from others in our four-story atrium. The space was closed off from hospital visitors, and the small group of people were all wearing masks. For the remainder of the First Lady's visit, she wore a mask and did not visit any patient care areas. However, CNN did not update its story, did not retract its story, did not apologize despite requests by the White House. I mean, it's just beyond disgraceful. All right, so a COVID relief bill may finally pass after months and months of failed talks and failed negotiations by Congress, and it's on both sides. I'm not going to sit here and say, I mean, look, the Democrats, they do this. They hold up these bills. They have all sorts of tricks up their sleeves. So there's no comparison. The Democrats, they can be egregious when it comes to all this stuff, you know, passing these bills. They try to, you know, stick in all these liberal things on their agenda that have no connection whatsoever to COVID-19 relief. But the Republicans are just, you know, they're just as dysfunctional. The Republicans, I think they're more sincere. I think they're more well-intentioned. But like Congress, they are dysfunctional on both sides of the aisle. This is the swamp. It is the swamp. President Trump did so much to change and drain the swamp. But, like, there's a limit to how much one man can do in 4 years. He needs a lot more time, and he needs a lot more people on board. But anyway, now why are they finally getting it passed? They're thinking they're going to pass it today and tomorrow. Why? Because they're literally on the brink of a government shutdown. Government shutdown deadlines are the only way anything gets done in Washington. It's pretty sad. So anyway, this relief bill, let me tell you some details about the relief bill. It would temporarily establish a $300 a week supplemental unemployment benefit. That's in addition to the state benefit. Remember, at one point, I believe it was $400 a week. So now it's going to go down to $300. Or was it higher? Was it even $600 a week? I don't know. There was that huge federal unemployment benefit package that basically encouraged people not to work, incentivized a lot of low-income earners not to work because they'd get paid less if they worked than they got for staying home from the government. And it would also have $600 direct stimulus payments to most Americans. It would provide a fresh round of subsidies for businesses that have been hit hard by the lockdowns. It would provide money for schools, health care providers, and renters that are facing eviction. Now, so this is like, what, a $1.4 trillion package or something like that. I mean, and by the way, the Democrats, they're the ones who always claim about being, you know, being out for the little guy, wanting to help the little guy. And yet they're the ones who always hold up these packages because it doesn't jibe with their own personal agenda, their liberal socialist agenda. And it's like, it's so bogus to sit there and claim that you care about the little guy. And then for months and months, you hold up, well, but this wasn't really going to, the Republicans, they were trying to help businesses. And look, this would have been extremely helpful to tens of millions of Americans. The Democrats, you know, refused to help get it passed, refused to compromise. I mean, that's all you need to say. But the Democrats don't care about the little guy. And the Republican policies and Trump's policies are infinitely better for the little guy than Democrat policies, by the way. Now, here's the question. Are they going to cut spending in some other area? They're going to be spending trillions more. They've already spent trillions. Are they going to be cutting spending somewhere else to pay for this? Of course not. They're just going to borrow. Just going to borrow more. We're already $26 trillion in debt. What's another trillion or two? Right? That's, and the budget deficit is now, what, $3 trillion or close to $4 trillion. This is by far a record budget deficit. Well, but it's because of COVID-19 and the pandemic. And, well, you know what? That excuse would be okay, except there was already such a massive deficit. And there was already such a huge amount of debt. I mean, an unfathomable, incomprehensible amount of national debt way before this. So you can't blame it on COVID. If you keep things balanced and you have, you know, money to spend during normal times, then when a crisis happens, you can be prepared. But if you're already in terrible, terrible shape, then you cannot use this as an excuse. All right, some good news. Ocasio-Cortez has lost a battle in Congress, in the House, for a very coveted seat on the Energy and Commerce Committee. She was desperate to get this. She battled for it for months, and now she lost because her Democrat colleagues actually voted against her in an anonymous vote. So this is great news. Now, don't make no mistake here. Ocasio-Cortez is extremely influential. Her influence is growing. She's young. She knows Twitter. She understands social media. She understands the mainstream media, how to get it on her side. She's a socialist, so a lot of people in the media, they just, you know, they really, really like her being there. They really give her tons of support, and they help boost her agenda. So this is a good sign for the short term, but it doesn't really help us. Okay, so what happened was this: Kathleen Rice actually won out. Kathleen Rice and Ocasio-Cortez were battling behind the scenes for weeks to secure one of the few open seats on this exclusive committee. This committee oversees everything from healthcare policy to climate issues. This is according to Politico. And the issue came to a head at a private meeting of the Steering and Policy Committee this past week. Democrats were forced to choose between both of those members, Rice and Ocasio. And it was a secret ballot vote and a very tense and awkward vote, according to Politico. And Rice won 46-13. So Ocasio lost by a landslide. Good news. But as I said, the bigger picture here, she's just getting stronger and more influential. Kevin McCarthy, the House Minority Leader, House Republican Leader, he has accused the FBI of stonewalling him. He is trying to obtain information on the Eric Swalwell scandal from the FBI. And Kevin McCarthy on Wednesday, he said he asked the FBI for a briefing on Swalwell's ties to a Chinese spy, and the FBI canceled the briefing two times already. So he says they're stonewalling. He said in a tweet, quote, "Swalwell is a national security liability. This is too important for the FBI to continue to stonewall." And finally, Kamala Harris, who I'm looking as the co-president right now, at least. She's at least the co-president, if not more. She's calling for common sense gun control. Common sense gun control from Kamala Harris. The problem is Kamala Harris has no common sense, and especially when it comes to gun control, but it comes to any issue. So what is her? So it's really, what does she mean? What does she mean when she talks about common sense gun control? Well, she did not clarify, but we already know from the primaries, we know Kamala Harris, what she believes is the correct approach to gun control, the common sense approach to gun control. Back in October of last year, 2019, she was speaking to an anti-gun rights group, an anti-Second Amendment group, and she said, quote, "We have to have a buyback program. I support a mandatory gun buyback program." So she actually has said that she supports a gun buyback program. Gun buyback is not like, well, we offer, she called it a mandatory, okay? That's not like, well, we're going to offer you incentive, we're going to offer you $1,000 if you hand in your gun. It's, we're going to force you to hand in your gun. We're going to pay you money. So instead of it being a theft program, instead of it being a let's steal people's guns programs, It's a buyback, mandatory buyback, but it's stealing. You're stealing. If you come into my house and you take my property and you give me money, you are stealing from me. That is just a different form of stealing. So she supports stealing people's guns away from them. That's her common sense approach to gun control. She also remembers she said that gun control should be implemented through executive order. She said, you know, if Congress isn't going to pass a bill about gun control, she'll just do it herself. You know, so she actually supports the president of the United States issuing an executive order to take away people's guns. Quote, this is what she said again during the primaries. Quote, I will give the U.S. Congress 100 days to get their act together. By the way, I'll interject, they couldn't get their act together in 100 years. And then she says, if they do not, I will take executive action. She was referring specifically to gun control when she said that. Pretty frightening. Stay positive. That's going to do it for today. I know it's hard. Stay positive. That's going to do it for today. And we will see you next time.